TFM.
Welcome, Stargazers, to another episode of The Artificial Tango, our dedicated Star Trek Picard podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, if I start whistling Three Blind Mice while you're talking today, don't get nervous. It's okay.
Okay, because, you know, it does bother me a little bit because, you know, I keep thinking, well, it didn't really help Strangways in Dr. No. So I've just got a little bit of PTSD with that song, Chris. So maybe if you could sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat or something of that fashion, I wouldn't be so triggered.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. I need to practice my whistling on that as well. Yes, everyone, we will continue our discussion of Star Trek Picard Season 3 today as the story unfolds. This is Episode 7, Dominion. And, Matthew, we got a little surprise right at the beginning of this episode.
You know, I thought that this was great usage of characters from 24th century shows. You know, we've had the question of whether or not there would be other characters from these shows that would show up, and Metalis had promised that that was actually going to be the case. And so to get Tuvok here at the beginning of the episode, have this surprise Vulcan show up, you know, I thought was great. And the whole fact, too, of course, you know, we're dealing with changelings. So is this the real Tuvok or not? And the way that they are working the conversation, they're using voice print matching, they're using Seven's knowledge of Tuvok and their relationship. And, you know, I love the way that she ends up trapping him because there are things that this changeling knows about Seven and the relationship that she had with Tuvok, but there's only so much that you can know about the depth of a relationship between two people. And so... Mm-hmm. Again, I thought this was just perfect usage of a character to which people are going to be excited to see. Fun fact, Tim Russ has said that he's in two episodes of this show. So we've already got it spoiled by Tim Russ saying, hey, he's going to be back, which is really fun. But to me, Chris, you know, this just blows open the doors on who else could they get to be back on this show? To me, that's the most exciting part because, in all honesty, with the fact that we've got the changelings here, I love that Tuvok's made, you know, an appearance because of his connection with Seven. But, you know, I would like to see, with this changeling connections, O'Brien, Dr. Bashir, somebody of that nature, because they deserve to be in the story. Look, I know that we're honoring Deep Space Nine by doing this story alone, but I think those characters actually also deserve to be here. I understand it's all about schedules and all those type of things, but it only feels right that one of them should show up in the next three episodes. So this was a good precedent to set.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, Tim Russ is a DS9 character. We had Mirror Tuvok.
Absolutely. You're completely right. I mean, until you said that, it totally had slipped my mind that he was in those...
He was only there shortly.
Yeah, exactly. oh my gosh, that's so... That you're 100% right. So, but again, I think those points still stands.
Yeah. I did see that tweet from Tim Russ about how it was super secret, but finally, now he can reveal that he's in two episodes. And I thought, oh, Tim... Why did you have to say two? Why didn't you just say, I am appearing in Picard? Because now we know that he's going to turn back up, which leads me to an idea I have for the character, which I will get into in a moment. But before I do that, you're absolutely right that we should have Miles and Julian make an appearance because of their connection to the morphogenic virus.
Exactly.
Which is a key part of this story. And it would make perfect sense for them to come into the picture somehow. because of their knowledge of the virus and how they assisted in actually getting the cure to the Great Link. But I, like you said, it depends a lot on schedules. People have already been complaining a bit about the fact that Marina Surtees hasn't appeared very much at all this season. And I think it was Jerry Ryan who tweeted that, you know, actors are people as well, and they also have schedules, and Marina being in London, they're shooting Picard in Los Angeles. You know, it's not so easy to coordinate all this stuff. And then Terry Metalis mentioned that Marina does play a big part in the final three episodes. So we do know that it can be tricky to get these characters in to the production process of a show. But if you're just purely looking at story, absolutely, I think it would make sense. And I actually think there is a decent chance that maybe at least Bashir might show up.
Yeah, I agree.
And talking about other people who might show up, of course, you and I mentioned a couple of episodes back, what if our Paw Wraith theory is correct, which I am increasingly thinking it's not, but what if it did have something to do with that, and they were able to get Avery Brooks back? And then on Daystrom Station, we saw the remains of Kirk on that screen.
Right.
And then...
What if you had Kirk, Janeway, Sisko, and Picard all in the same scene together?
We're just bringing back... It's the Captain's documentary. We got to get Archer in there as well.
Which, you know, Chris, talking about the idea of surprises, you know, that was such a surprise to see Kirk's body there. And another tweet from Metalis said, you know, look, very clear that from me doing that, I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of the way Captain Kirk went out in Generations. And I was also a big fan and loved the book, The Return. And so in many ways, Metalis opening up the door for something to be done in that nature. And so the fact that Paramount allowed him to do that in the first place, such a cool thing, right? Like, whether they ever use that or not, who knows, right? But I thought that that was really fun that they would allow the creator here of season three of Picard to throw in that Easter egg, which for Star Trek fans is huge.
Yeah, it's great fun. And I can see a number of paths here for Kirk, because on that screen in the station where we see Kirk's remains, there is a text explanation that it was that Kirk's body was recovered by Project Phoenix. And in the Millennium novels in the Litverse, there's also a Project Phoenix, which was something that Admiral Picard had put together, and it was a time ship, actually, that was created, and they travel back in time to destroy Bajor before the threat of the Bajoran Ascendancy, which was a group that worshipped the Paw Wraiths, could destroy the whole universe by bringing together a wormhole and a second wormhole, like a blue and red wormhole. I don't think that has anything to do with the story that we're seeing in Picard season three. But if you just think about them doing research on all kinds of things that have appeared on screen and in the books and comics and everywhere in Star Trek, and pulling these little threads, it's kind of a fun thing to think about. Yeah. And then there's the obvious idea of the Phoenix and rising from the ashes, and the ashes of Eden, and this thing that you mentioned. So there are a lot of possible paths that they could go with Kirk there. And if they wanted to give Shatner one more moment on screen in the Star Trek franchise, who knows, maybe we get a special cameo there as well.
Well, and I think what I love too is, again, we talked about last week the nostalgia idea, but I think everything's been used so perfectly here because, you know, even when we're having this conversation with our surprise visit from Changeling Tuvok, you know, they're hiding in the Chintaka system, which is one of the biggest battlefields of the Dominion War, which has basically just become a wreckage zone of destroyed starships. And so the fact that This episode's called Dominion. We're hiding in one of the graveyards, the starship graveyards of one of the biggest battles of that storyline. It's fantastic. And so this is one of the things I think that this season has done so well that Metalis and the writers have really keyed into, is that what we're going to use is going to pay homage to all the things that have come before, but it also needs to make sense for the story that we're telling. We can't just be throwing things in there that don't make sense. And so all of this makes complete sense. I mean, of course, Seven would reach out to Tuvok. You know, as they've tried to reach out to Admiral Janeway and other people, we realize through this conversation, they've reached out to a lot of people. They've been trying to do this for a while, and it's just not been working very well. And so I think that this really here is, again, excellent usage of the material that you have for the right reasons, not just because, oh, wouldn't it be cool if.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I also think they did a good job of making us think that it really was Tuvok. And then maybe it wasn't, and oh, okay, it's Tuvok. And then, nope, you're not Tuvok. So it was played well, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
While we're talking about Tuvok, maybe we can transition to Jack, because especially after Tim Russ's revelation that he's going to be in another episode, I started thinking about what that might mean and thinking about what's going on with Jack, and also what I was just talking about, where Seven finally figures out that it isn't really Tuvok. So what we don't know is Tim Russ going to be here as changeling Tuvok, or will he show back up as the actual Tuvok, which I think is probably more likely, that we will start to recover these characters. So we'll recover Riker and maybe recover Tuvok.
Right.
We need to rescue our characters. And if you look at what's going on with Jack, and especially it plays out in this episode where he's hearing things, he's seeing things, and Seven is able to bust changeling Tuvok by mentioning that she actually had her neural patterns stabilized while she was aboard Voyager, thanks to the help of Tuvok. And it's possible that Tuvok could play a role coming up with Jack of helping in some way by helping him stabilize neural patterns. I mean, it would be a bit different than Seven having been a former Borg, of course, but if you just think of it in more broad terms, there could be something there. And also in talking about recovering our characters who have been taken prisoner, or at least it seems, if we get Troy back, there's also the opportunity that Troy could play a role in helping Jack because of her empathic nature. And,
right,
you know, there are... One thing I love about the season is that I know that when we go back and we rewatch the whole thing from the start, we're going to pick up on so many clues,
yes,
that we didn't notice the first time, even on multiple rewatches, because we didn't have the whole story yet. And if you go back several episodes when Jack had that vision of himself coming onto the bridge and killing all of the crew members, and the last person standing was Esmar. And Esmar is a Halean. And the Haleans are, if you think back to The Next Generation, they are telepathic with each other, but they're empathic with other species. And she told him, "I know what you are." And there was another time where she was passing in the corridor and she looked at him like she sensed something. And then you see what happens with Jack in this episode and the way he's able to communicate with Sydney. There's some kind of telepathic, empathic, there's something going on with him. And so connecting all of these dots, And then if you think about, say, Troy coming back in, or you think about Tuvok coming back in and being able to do a mind meld or something, I think there are a lot of interesting possibilities for the story.
Yeah, I mean, we learned quite a bit about Jack, even though we don't learn everything. You know, we leave on the cliffhanger of the Vadic saying it's time to be told who you truly are. And
she says what you are.
Exactly.
Actually, which was an interesting choice of words.
And like you mentioned, you know, Jack has this ability to connect with people telepathically, but also he can apparently be a puppet master, which is pretty cool. You know, remote control Sydney was awesome. And
yeah,
but she, so interesting things. Vadic says that she wants to take him to a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Plus she mentions the idea of Jack's physiology, whatever that means, like whether, like the idea that that's not something that we have a full understanding of, even though we just had Crusher last episode do a full, like deep scan of him. So there's something about that. But Vadic also says that Jack isn't for Vadic or Beverly. He is intended for somebody else. And you mentioned there, Chris, this idea that, you know, you were thinking less and less of the Pod Wraith theory, but to me, this sounded like something the prophets would have said to Sisko.
Absolutely.
So just what I love about this is that the mystery is so interesting that we still can't quite figure it out. And what this seemed like to me was that somebody had created the birth of Jack to be both Picard and Beverly's child and secretly impregnate her, my guess is, for their own nefarious purposes down the line. And whether or not that's the Paw Wraiths or somebody else, it definitely seems like that has happened. And if that's the case, they have Jack as the key for whatever their plan is. And so it also brought into question to me, like, who's behind all this with Jack? And I was thinking about this, and it's like, this person would have to be playing a very long game. They would have to be someone who knew about the changelings at Daystrom, and possibly, of course, they've got a beef with the Federation, obviously, who could cover up completely the changelings being missing from Daystrom. So I don't know who that is, but that gives us some clues. And it, like you said, this is going to be one of those things we're going to get the answer and we're going to be like, of course.
Right.
But I feel like they've just done such a good job of giving us just enough to be able to percolate on, but never actually come to the full idea of who this is, which is great. And I love that. And so, but there are still so many ways you could go with this.
Yeah, well, they give us lots of plausible misdirections, which helps a lot in things that we'll probably notice as obvious clues, but we don't right now because they give us others that are for misdirection, but are equally plausible. So it's, I think the story's being told really well. About, I said I'm not as convinced that it's the Paw Wraiths now. And part of that is because I still think it fits the story quite well. And you're definitely right that someone is playing a long game and brought Jack into existence 23, 24 years ago for some ultimate purpose that they knew was going to take a long time to get to. So who that would be? It certainly could be the Paw Wraiths. I started looking very closely at the face and trying to imagine what that thing is. And in particular, when it refers to Vadic and your people and your kind and your physiology and things like that, is it someone from outside talking to changelings, or is it a changeling talking to these evolved, I'm doing air quotes, changelings here that resulted from the experiments that were taking place on Daystrom's station? And I can see that as being a possibility. I think that it's possible that the renegade changelings that have broken off from the Great Link and are trying to get revenge on the Federation are not simply Vadic and the others who she has passed on this ability to mimic blood and internal organs and hold their form.
Right.
That maybe these people, like Vadic, are the foot soldiers for the changelings that are really carrying out this plot against Federation. It's very hard to tell because the face, when the face collapses, it collapses back into the form of goo like a changeling and it goes back onto her hand. But, you know, that it's not the actual being there. It's whatever she cuts off her hand, it's part of her, and then it's acting as some kind of communications system, right? Like a fancy holographic display or something. You could think of it as something like that, except yeah, it's organic.
That's like a evil changeling Apple Watch.
Yeah, that's the Apple Watch Ultra Evil Edition, right?
Ultra Evil Edition.
Yeah. It's just the action button is very hard to press, so you have to actually cut it off your hand first, which I'm pretty sure the lawyers would not want to market such a device. But anyway, I just started thinking more about who this person could be. The face tells Vadic, your physiology is not as special or complex as you believe. You are by nature malleable, made to bend. Their kind is beholden to a singular flesh. And the latter part of that is more the philosophical side of the battle that's going on between the changelings and the solids. But the part about your physiology not being as special or complex as you believe, I thought was interesting.
Well, and that's where, too, it's like you're saying, this could be the changelings, you know, as a part of this separate link.
Mm-hmm.
The renegade faction. It could be the Paw Wraiths. I mean, there's these different things that kind of fit with what's happening. And again, I think mm-hmm. you know what you're saying with this idea of it being the renegade changelings who have found out about these changelings that Starfleet had been working on to try and create the ultimate spy, the ultimate monster. And then utilize them for their own desires, which is to destroy the Federation as we know it. And I don't feel fine. You know, I think that fits the idea that they would be able to play the long game. We know changelings mm-hmm. live who knows how long, right? Unless somebody destroys them, they're living pretty much forever. And so
mm-hmm.
the fact that they would have this kind of long-term plan that they wouldn't get too impatient about is very interesting, and that then their impatience grows here because their plan does have a timeline because it's also now based around non-malleable forms and a specific mm-hmm. timeline for things that, you know, the dominoes they have set up so that once they push one, it falls. So this is to me, the joy of this season is that it's been so well plotted so far that I don't know how it's going to end up. And I will say, this is also the thing where you just pray that they land the plane well, right? This is where you're praying to the prophets, right? Please land this plane well, because you mm-hmm. could do all of this incredible setup, but you really need to stick the landing here. And everything I've seen so far in the season tells me that that's going to happen. But as with everything, I can't be 100% sure that's going to happen. And so,
right. Yeah.
But I like, though, that even in episode 7, there are still so many questions that I can't quite put my finger on, even though there are just the right amount of clues that I can start making my mystery board with all the red, you know, yarn going from this to this to this to this. And it doesn't give me any clear conclusion just yet as to what the actual answer is. And that's, to me, that's just phenomenal writing.
Yeah. I know this is not what they're going to be doing, but I like the idea of, I mentioned the Project Phoenix from the DS9 Millennium novels earlier. And in particular, there's a novel, it's called The War of the Prophets. And I like the idea that a breakaway group of changelings got involved in this Bajoran ascendancy and worshiping the Pa race, and therefore got help from the Pa race. And then like all the pieces we're talking about could fit together. It would be a fun story. while we're talking about Vadic and the creation of the ultimate spy and the ultimate monster, I thought it was great that we actually got some real explanation in this episode about what is going on and why they're able to mimic organs. You and I have talked about that and speculated a lot about that in various episodes of this show as the season has unfolded. But here we find out that in this case, they didn't get a helping hand from Pa Wraiths or anyone like that. They were actually engineered by the Federation through torturous experiments to be able to hold their form and mimic blood and mimic organs and such. And the project was called Project Proteus. And it's a reference to Greek mythology. And it also gives us, I think, some interesting clues and ideas about the overall nature of the story. I know you did a little bit of looking into that.
Yeah, so I thought that because I thought, Project Proteus, that sounds like a real, you know, mythological name. And, you know, many times when we use Greek mythology or Roman mythology, it's for a reason. And this is definitely Greek mythology. And the idea of Proteus was that there are a god who knew all things past, present, and future, but they didn't like divulging that information. And so if you wanted to consult with him, you had to surprise him and blind him during his noonday slumber. And when caught, he would try to escape by assuming all sorts of shapes. And if his captor was able to hold fast to him, the god then turned into the proper shape and gave them the wished for answer and plunged into the sea afterwards. And so,
do you mean plunged into the Great Link?
Exactly, the Great Link scene. And so, but I thought, you know, one, obviously, the beauty here is that the writers have really done their homework to understand what's going to fit. We're not just pulling out any Greek mythological name, and it makes sense. Now, I do think that this is not just Starfleet. I definitely feel like this is a Section 31 thing, that they are the ones here on Daystrom Station where they've got all these things that nobody knows about, and they are the ones that are looking to create these perfect, undetectable spies who, as Vadic says, can drop into any species and create chaos. But also you think of the idea that you would be able to then get the information you want because you're mimicking your enemy. You can have this longed for information in a way that you couldn't get if you didn't have these abilities. And so, as Vadic says, they're basically creating their perfect monster. And what I was most surprised at is the way in which this really mirrors human hubris and our desire to play with things, to create worse versions of those things and make them deadlier, is really dumb. How just ludicrous it is to take something and make it deadlier and not feel like you're not going to pay for the consequences of that. You know, we see that in the way in which people engineer weapons, the way people do biological experiments, the way people do those type of experience with viruses. You know, so I felt like there was a real, very clear message here in this episode, which is, again, very Star Trek, right? To speak to our own milieu, to really point out this is not a good idea, because what do they end up doing? They end up creating the perfect monster, the one that mm-hmm. is nigh undetectable by anyone. And yet, through the research here that we were able to pull from Daystrom, we actually find that we can detect these changelings because of a molecule that they use that has a 100-year half-life, mm-hmm. which would
Thelomium 847, which
exactly.
sounds like a jazz musician, you know, Thelomium Monk. I think Riker probably knows it.
Riker has all of their albums on vinyl. So
his favorite album is 847, though.
Exactly. 8472, yeah. Actually. But I think that, you know, what's so interesting about this is that we've not only created another place in which it remind and people sometimes complain about this way, I think, with Star Trek, is the idea that, you know, we continue to show the Federation or segments of the Federation or Section 31 or whatever making these mistakes. But mm-hmm. I think the reason that is because, again, it's shining light on who we still are yeah. as human beings and our human nature, which is to do this. And it reminds us that if we are not constantly vigilant against this type of thing, it's going to continue to happen. And then, too, I we still have this thing where they don't want to use transporters. So it really made me wonder, you know, is there something about transporters that actually destroys the molecular uh-huh. ability that they have to actually shapeshift the way they want to because of the experiments that were done on them? And that's why they only travel in, I don't know.
Yeah, you had asked this question in our outline as we were getting ready for the show and before I watched the episode again. So I was thinking about it and I thought, I know the answer in this episode. The reason Vadic doesn't want to use transporters is so that Vadic and her changeling crew can make a grand entrance when they arrive on the Titan. Because if they just beam in, it's not as dramatic. And so we want them to be able to come down the corridor, you know, after they leave the shuttle. But no, seriously, I think you're probably right that the transporters probably affect their ability to hold their form or mimic organs if used repeatedly. I feel like, and I may be wrong, I'd have to go back and rewatch. I feel like we have seen some of these changelings beam aboard ships season.
Yep.
So they can do it. But it is very possible that it damages them. And if they do it repeatedly, mm-hmm. it will cause problems. In the same way that the way the morphogenic virus in Deep Space Nine worked is that when a changeling changed shape, then it accelerated the virus and led yes. to their
yep,
death.
That's a good point. Yep.
So it could be something like that. But yeah, they obviously don't want to use the transporters. It could also be that they didn't want anyone to be able to track the location of the transport where they would be arriving because, you know, maybe she's suspicious that the ship is actually not derelict. And maybe it would be easier to go and conceal yourself in a shuttle. I don't know. There are many ideas. I think that the one I like most is the idea, yes, that transporters damage their abilities.
Or, aggravate whatever it is with them. And that could be with, you know, the idea that this Thelonium 847 that's used to help them with this, you mm-hmm. know, it could be something to which is maybe the key. Mm-hmm. It also, I think it was great because it does give us this ability then to detect the changelings wherever they are. And mm-hmm. also made me wonder, too, just kind of throwing back to Jack for a second, Jack's ability to be able to control people, does that allow him to maybe possibly be able to help retake the ship mm-hmm. because of his ability to be able to do that as well? So, again, they're just dropping all these things in here, right? That I think when we rewatch the season, and we've said many times already this episode, where it's just going to be like, oh yeah, that's the moment where that happened, and that then led to this next thing, and that's how it fits in, you know. So mm-hmm. really, I do truly feel as though every episode is continuing to put puzzle pieces together, but it's like trying to put a puzzle together when you don't know what the actual picture of the puzzle is. Mm-hmm. And so there's only that one, there's that one moment where, oh, I know exactly what this is, right? And that just hasn't happened yet because we haven't had enough of the puzzle pieces come together, which is crazy to think that we're, you know, 2/3 through the season, basically. And mm-hmm. We are really at this point. And there's only 3 episodes left, and we still just don't have some of these big questions answered. And I think, in all honesty, the biggest question is the question about Jack and mm-hmm. the question of who is truly behind Vadic and why. And why in the world would, you know, Jack be the one that's being created for this? And why would then Picard and Beverly be targeted? And how does this, again, how does this all fit together? And I love the fact that we still don't know yet. And mm-hmm. that's kind of great. But Chris, this also leads me to some other questions about another Picard mystery box, but mm-hmm. not Jack Picard or Jack Crusher or Jack Crusher Picard or whatever we're going to end up calling him by the end. Data/Lore mm-hmm. says that there was an anomaly about mm-hmm. Picard, and that
he says there's an anomalous form, which suggests like an actual physical something, not just a mystery anomaly, but like an actual right. something inside him,
and that his new body is imperfect, perfectly imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was a possible misdiagnosis of Iremotic syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And this made me question, was this done so someone could implant something in Picard and he could pass it on? Like, it mm-hmm. raised so many questions to me as to what this is. And to me, this also kind of debunked the idea that this is a Borg thing, because
I think the Borg thing is out now. Yeah, I'd be very surprised if this is a Borg story.
Because at that point, you know, saying it's an anomaly doesn't make sense, because an anomaly mm-hmm. means it's something that nobody understands what it is. But at this point, I feel like we pretty much understand everything that goes into making a drone and or a Borg queen, or, you know, Locutus, who they were and what it was that was inside of them. And so to me, this did, and not just because I don't want it to be the Borg, but I felt like the wording here did kind of put the nail in the coffin of the idea mm-hmm. that there's anything Borg related to this, especially with the way it connects with who the heck Jack is and how he can do the things he can do, which has nothing to do with the Borg either. I mean, they weren't known for being like telepathic puppet masters
mm-hmm.
like this.
Right.
So.
Right. I think that, I think the Borg story is out. If there's some small connection to the Borg and the fact that Jean-Luc was Locutus, maybe that could be there, but I really don't think this is a Borg story. I don't even think nanoprobes have anything to do with it. I think it was made clear in this episode that what they need isn't nanoprobes, but DNA strands. They need Jack's DNA, because Beverly says to Jean-Luc, your DNA is yours and Jack's is Jack's, but is it possible that a DNA sample from a relative could be used to complete an incomplete DNA sequence? Okay, what is the incomplete DNA sequence? Is that the anomalous form inside Picard's body that the data android is referring to? I think probably not, but in the closing credits, since the beginning, we've been seeing all these DNA strands. So now it really makes sense why we have all these DNA strands. And Vadik pretty much explains, or in the conversation between Vadik and Picard, it is explained that the changelings, they stole Picard's body because they want to create like a perfect doppelganger of Picard so that
right.
he will be present at Frontier Day. Now, why they need him to be present at Frontier Day to carry out their plan of destroying the whole fleet and killing everybody, I'm not quite sure. It seems like they should be able to do that with or without him. But maybe they want to make him say something in particular.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
It needs to come from the mouth of Jean-Luc Picard and the eyes of all of Starfleet and the Federation. Now, what that would be, I'm not sure yet, but it definitely seems that, yeah, they stole the body because they want to create a doppelganger mm-hmm. of Picard. And in order to do that, they need something from Jack, a DNA sequence. A DNA sample alone doesn't really explain what's going on with Jack or why he would have been created. So there is still more to it than that. And that's where I think it goes back to our idea that there are multiple parties who have an interest in this. The changelings, Vadik and her group, they have an interest in getting revenge on the Federation and doing what they need with Picard's body to carry out their plan. But it does seem like Jack was created for something else as well, for somebody else. And that's where I like going back to our Pa-Wraith theory, right? That he's like the Pa-Wraith's emissary to counter the Prophet's emissary. That'd be a lot for one story, though, if all of that were to be true.
Right.
But the reason they stole Picard's body is pretty clear at this point, unless they're doing a really good job of they're going to throw us a curveball here in the next few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening with Jack overall, still not so clear. And the Iremotic syndrome, I thought, was interesting because using Iremotic syndrome to explain a lot of stuff leading up to this point in the season made a lot of sense for fans because we know about Picard and the Iremotic syndrome. And that gives us this great nostalgic tie to the Next Generation. And then to the first season of this series. And it's also something that you could see plausibly being passed through the family, even going back to his mother, who we talked about last time. But when I'm just going to call him Data, or Data Lore here for the sake, because I don't want to say the whole name of the Daystrom.
How about Delore?
Android. Delore, okay, Delore. As Delore said in this episode, when Delore says, Soong research indicates an anomalous form inside Jean-Luc Picard, previous diagnosis of Iremotic syndrome is in question. The use of the word form, I thought, is important because it really does sound like someone implanted something. They put something inside Picard. And they would have had to have done it a long time ago.
Right.
Even before. But this is the thing that I'm not quite sure about. They would have done it before the Dominion War, before the Bajoran wormhole was discovered, for it to work on this timeline. Or at least before the Dominion War, at any rate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that leads back to the Pa-Wraiths. Like when you think of the idea of like time yeah. and time being malleable and or time travel,
mm-hmm.
you know, the fact that you could go back and implant something so that you could enact this plan. But again, that's where it's like it's cleaner where it's the Pa-Wraiths instead of like mm-hmm. a weird time travel story that somebody pulled off.
If they throw time travel in the final three episodes of a 10 episode story, I think that would be a lot yeah. to swallow as well.
Or future guy.
Or future guy, which again, and that's something that Steve Clark mentioned in the Babel conference, how some aspects of future guy and how he helped the Cabal and gave them the abilities to do genetic modifications and so forth ties in to what we've been seeing. And it does, and you could make a very interesting story out of that, although I don't really, I think that would be quite a stretch to have it be involving the temporal Cold War as well. Yeah. I think that would be too much. So I don't think that's what's going on here. But you could certainly start over from zero and write a story that involved that and make it work. But I think the Pa Wraiths and the Prophets, again, I keep coming back to it because, you know, for them, time really has no meaning. They can go past, present, future. And the fact that if they were involved in implanting something in Picard, bringing Jack into being the same way that they brought Sisko into being, the fact that it happened before the Dominion War or the discovery of the Bajoran wormhole or any of this stuff, from our perspective, doesn't matter to them because they can see what's going to happen later. And Jack is also seeing what is going to happen later at times. He has premonitions, or he actually not only sees events, but I think he feels like he's there.
Right.
In events that haven't happened yet, and that he's a part of them, right? So, and I was rewatching that sequence where he and Sydney are trapped between the force fields and the changeling soldiers are there. And Sydney's trapped and the changeling is over her and everything's dark. It's kind of hard to see what's going on. And I felt like, well, the changeling would just kill her. But instead, the changeling seems to stop. And then Jack and Sydney sort of communicate telepathically, which also isn't obvious, I felt, the first time you watch it, exactly what's happening. And it made me think for a moment, is Jack stopping time so he can communicate with her and tell her what to do before time starts moving again? And I don't think that's what's happening because I rewatched it several times and I think it's just it's just drama. It's just like, let's have the changeling not kill her because the story would end and it'd be boring. Let's have him kind of think about it for a minute. But anyway, it was lingering, though.
Is this an evolution of the power that Picard learned on Baku?
Oh, that's a good point.
Of being able to, you know, live in a moment and stay in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
We come back a little bit to Insurrection, as we did one of our first podcasts here with the season. But, you know, that's definitely something that happened to Picard that he learned to be able to do. He was able to do it with Inej in that one moment. Mm-hmm. And we did, of course, have the call out of that earlier in the season with Shaw throwing shade about that. And so, you know, that would be very interesting, I think, to kind of come back to that idea.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, again, I think the beauty of this is that there are so many questions and or kind of like these puzzle pieces that we feel like, oh, does that, you know, when you're putting a puzzle together and you're like, oh, that piece goes there and it feels like it fits. And then you realize, oh, it doesn't quite fit, but like it did.
Almost.
Yes.
Like you can push it in, but you've got like a little gap, right? Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's kind of what we are playing with here with all of these theories, and I love that, and I think that's what makes this season so great, is that there are a lot of like different little things where you could place in different pieces, but if one of those is wrong, the rest of it's wrong, right? And so it's, or you know, if a part of it's right but then other part's wrong, you just can't tell which is which yet, which I really like. And there was something that really stood out to me in this episode, you know, this idea of the line and what lines you're willing to cross. Like, what are you willing to do to survive, to save a friend? Why are you going to cross that line? And it was interesting because Vadic makes this in speech to them, and she talks about this idea of ignoring each other's pain. She says, for an enlightened species, your ability to ignore each other's pain is interesting, basically. And this idea that she's talking to Picard, and she says, do you think, and she's talking about Beverly, that she would have left with your son if she knew the pain that it caused you? Mm-hmm. And that we're willing to do that. And it was interesting to me because I was thinking about this idea of pain and that maybe that's kind of the point. Much like in the movie Inside Out, where we learn that emotions like sadness are actually very important because they're more complex than we give them credit for. You know, pain's much like that. Pain is a lot more nuanced and in many ways a better teacher than what we go through that is less painless. And I think what's interesting to me as I'm thinking through all the storylines that have been happening this season, pain, I think, instinctively leads to fear. And it's the fear of more pain. Fear helps us make the choice to do terrible things because we don't want to experience more pain. And in many ways, we end up kind of becoming the very things we hate and or are fighting because we're trying to avoid pain. Like, you know, I thought of Starfleet with the experiments that they do. Beverly taking Jack away. Geordi not wanting to fight. And this fear, it chips away as Beverly's talking about your moral compass to the point where you're willing to compromise your beliefs because you mistakenly believe you have no other option. And what we really want is we want connection, like Jack and Seven were talking about in a previous episode. We want to cross those vast spaces between us and feel completely known and completely loved at the same time. And that's where I really came to this idea that the choice of love in the face of fear is actually the greatest power. Instead of giving into fear, which is easy, look at Lore, right? Who is an example who says it's just all about survival. But to choose love and real true love is always sacrificial. That's the hardest road to be on. It's the true road of courage. And like, pain really only leads to more pain for the most part. And or it can kind of temporarily take away pain. But the true gain, the true joy comes from like when we move through the pain, which allows us to grow stronger and deeper and better connected to those around us. And so I was just really struck by how this whole season we've had all of these characters, whether it's the Federation at large, the changelings that are, you know, they started a war with us because of fear. You know, the fear of with what happened with Jack and Beverly taking him away from Picard because of fear of what might happen to him. Geordi, fear for his family. Data and Lore, the idea of, you know, Lore always just being fearful and all he wants to do is survive, but is survival really living? The fear of Geordi of like, do I let Data fight for his own existential existence against Lore and find it, or do I just destroy Lore? Like, all of these questions are driven by these two questions of pain and fear. And really, it's the middle way. It's you got to choose the sacrificial love. And I was just really struck by that. And it really hit me. I mean, I'm sorry, I've been monologuing for too long, but it hit me very deeply about, I think, how beautiful that this season has been because of that, of watching people slowly begin to overcome their fears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something the season has done really well from the start. And people finding themselves again and reflecting on life choices, and these elements have all resonated with me quite well. You mentioned Lore there, and Lore always wants to survive, but it's driven by fear. Geordi also mentions in this episode that Lore loves the chaos.
Right.
And I think that's an important element to Lore too, that it isn't just that he wants to survive, but he loves creating havoc. He revels in it. And if you look at Data, data represents more the order. So you've got order versus chaos here. And then if you look again at these stories reflecting society, you look at our world today. I mean, I think the world's always kind of been like this, but we notice it more in the age in which we live. That's normal for people. But today, there's a lot of chaos, and there are a lot of people who seem to thrive on the chaos and want to keep it going. And so there's that question of order or chaos, which one will prevail? And that takes us back to the idea of the Great Link and the founders as well, because the founders, they want order, and they view the solids and the world of the solids as chaos.
Yes.
So it all ties together quite well in these themes.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, though, because even their supposed order, they have chaos in, because mm-hmm. there has been a splinter group of the Link that has split off because they don't agree sure. with the Great Link. Yeah. And I think that that is another very subtle, and I appreciate this, it's very subtle. It's not in your face. But mm-hmm. this is what the season is about, this idea of the ways in which we can drift apart. And yeah. where we once held the same values, all of a sudden we no longer hold the same values anymore. And the ways in which that can happen, and what usually causes that to happen. It's some kind of fear that leads us to put somebody in another category of other that makes them an enemy instead of being able to find a way to be a friend, which, you know, you mentioned the idea of Delore and the idea that there's kind of too many voices kind of going on in their head. There's the data side and there's the lore side. And what mm-hmm. I was most struck by was just how this is basically the enemy within. And mm-hmm. the idea of that, as a person, we have to have that combination of the good side of us and the evil side of us that balance out, which mm-hmm. the enemy within talks so much about. Data actually needs both of these sides. In fact, it was even mentioned in a previous episode, the idea that, and I think it was Soong who said that this new version would be the greatest of all of us, because mm-hmm. in this, he would be completely human. The reason Data could never be completely human is it wasn't that he was just lacking emotion. He was lacking that other side of you that creates what we consider evil, right? That mm-hmm. there's this two sides of us that are constantly kind of battling for dominance in us. And mm-hmm. it's the forging and control of both sides that makes mm-hmm. us the best version of who we are as human beings. I think that really speaks to this. And so I was struck by that, because in the end, it's not going to be, I think, about Data or Lore winning. It is going to be about them finally coming together and embracing who they are.
Yeah, I think so.
And creating a whole being, mm-hmm. because neither Data or Lore is a whole being in and of themselves.
Right. And that would make perfect sense for what we're seeing with so many of the characters in this season.
Yes.
Picard, Geordi, Riker, Seven, Shaw, these characters, they're not whole. Even Beverly, they're not whole because of things that have happened to them, and they're trying to mend. And that would make perfect sense to embody that in the battle between Data and Lore,
yeah.
and reach that ultimate goal that Soong had. And you talk about good and evil, and some people might take the word evil as meaning like murderous or doing truly, truly evil things. But in our culture, we have that idea of like the angel and the devil on your shoulder, and you see it a lot, even in cartoons and all. And I think to soften the word evil, and I like the enemy within comparison here, because what that showed in Kirk was that we need this part of us that is calm and orderly and does the right thing, cares for others, supports others, but we also need this part of us that takes chances and is a bit out of control and has this drive. And then ideally, those come together to create a well-rounded person who is generally in control of themselves, but also has that drive, that energy to push forward and accomplish things. And Data and Lore are sort of an example of that, right? Where Lore is just too egotistical, too out of control, too arrogant. And Data is maybe too cautious, too timid, too orderly. He's what you would expect an android to be, I suppose. But you can see where Soong's goal in trying to truly create a person who is synthetic would want what we see in Data and Lore to come together. And yeah, I think you're right that that's going to be the ultimate outcome of this story.
Well, and I think the thing about this is too, you know, it also reminds us that there are two sides to everything, right? There's two sides of the Federation. There's two sides of the Dominion. There's that nothing is completely black and white in this. And I think that that's what this is trying to get us to see, because, and this season has done a good job of reminding us that there's greatness to the Federation, but there's also a dark side to it. There's beauty to the Great Link, right? The idea that everybody can share freely everything they are and be one and have this, it's hard to even describe because it's so existential, but this true being known and being loved feeling that would come from being one with everyone else like that is something that's, again, it's even hard for us to put into human conceptual terms. And so, but there's also this idea that they're so fearful of what they have, they're afraid of losing any of it to the possibility of somebody not understanding them and being fearful of them because of what they can do, that then they turn into the very thing that we all fear and create. So, again, the thing that I'm most impressed with this season has not just been the fun that it's been and that it really has captured the heart of what I think the Star Trek that we got with TNG, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager, and Enterprise, and I throw Enterprise in there because, you know, Enterprise is still part of that Berman era of Star Trek, but so much of it was, when it was at its best, it was reminding us of these really important ideas. And that's what Gene Roddenberry was all about with Star Trek, right? Of trying to help us look at ourselves in a mirror and see ourselves. And of course, you know, of course, the mirror, right? And that's what he wanted to do. And I think that this season has been the best of both worlds of entertainment, nostalgia, and allowing us, without preaching at us loudly, but subtly reminding us there are things to which you need to see about yourself and you need to fix. Because if you don't, the natural consequences of that could be this. And it, to me, that's where Star Trek's at its best, and that's where I think this season has been at its best, and why so many fans have responded so overjoyously to this season.
Yeah, that's it. And it's also why Strange New Worlds was so successful, because it follows that same formula, which we have gotten away from in modern Star Trek, where we've fallen into not exclusively, but largely just telling a dramatic story that continues week after week to some typically obvious ending, instead of exploring the human condition, which is what Star Trek was all about. And that's where, when you can deal with lots of characters and you can really delve into them and you can interweave these things as well, you're able to reflect on what it means to be alive and how society functions and such much more effectively, which is what Star Trek does when it's at its best. And at the end of this episode, it was really interesting. Well, Beverly has sort of a mini arc in this episode, because when Beverly starts talking about a possible solution and she says, oh, I'm worried about crossing the line, because if you target someone's biology, that's tantamount to genocide. And so I know we're desperate, but I worry about crossing a line. And then by the end of the episode, she's telling Jean-Luc, like, I think I'm done. I'm across the line now. There's no benefit in keeping Vadic alive. And Jean-Luc agrees with her, and they're ready to kill Vadic. And that's something that I don't think we would have ever expected from our characters, these two characters in particular. But that goes back to what you talked about earlier with fear and where fear will drive you. And it's probably a good thing that Lore dropped the force fields and Vadic was able to escape, because as much as it might benefit everyone for Vadic to be gone, think about what it would mean for the characters of Jean-Luc and Beverly if they had right. actually executed Vadic.
Well, and I think the beauty of this too is that, and the whole place that I kind of pulled the idea of this line from is, of course, you know, from Beverly and Picard talking about it specifically, but mm-hmm. you know, that speech that Geordi gives to Delore when he's saying that when you died, it broke me.
And that yet, was a really powerful scene.
It was your life that I remembered that helped me be able to move on. And that's where I really came to this thought process of the idea of the inside out, right? In that, again, mm-hmm. in that movie where, you know, as you're growing up, you learn that emotions like sadness and these type of things are much more complex than just the binary that we think they are. They're not. It's not sadness or joy. Sadness, especially as we look back, things that can cause us sadness can be the fact that we miss somebody that we love because we don't live near them, right? And so there's this complex nature to who we are. There's a nuance to everything we are. And I think the beauty of all of this is that, again, 21st century Star Trek, when it was at its best, was about nuance. And one of the big nuances really came, obviously, with Deep Space Nine, where we asked a lot of these moral questions. And I think what's beautiful is that this show, as much as it is a pulling from, you know, TNG, the questions that we're asking are more Deep Space Nine related, because they're about the intricacies of humanity in a way that are much deeper and richer than TNG actually really ever asked. Mm-hmm. But Deep Space Nine did. And I think that that's, and I would say Enterprise then asked those questions as well. And so I love that. I think, you know, before we get out of here, Chris, one of the things we just kind of need to talk about is the fact that, you know, this episode ends on a major cliffhanger where Vadic mm-hmm. is in control of the Titan. Yeah. And how do you feel about that, especially in light of the speech that she gives at the end about, you know, what it means to be a changeling and how you realize that there are many ways to the ocean from the river and mm-hmm. how that kind of plays into the rest of the season?
Okay. Good question there. So you're asking maybe specifically about that idea of there are many ways to the ocean.
Well, yeah, I mean, because, you know, Picard has a great idea in this episode, I think, to turn the tables, right? And yet, mm-hmm. because Vadic's fluidity, I think, mm-hmm. not only in thought, but in planning, allows them to be able to turn the tables again for their benefit in a way mm-hmm. we didn't see coming, you know, I think... is just a really interesting idea. But and then, of course, again, we get left on a major cliffhanger now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't given this one too much thought. I did think when she mentioned the ocean it made me immediately think about the Great Link again, because of course with them being changelings, but this idea of what is Jack? And earlier in the episode, she said that she wants to take Jack to a better place when they first board the ship, and she meets him in the corridor, and right. he says, what the hell does that mean? And then at the end of this, she tells Jack, it's time that you learn what you are. And I've been saying all along, like, I don't think Jack is just a human, just the son of Jean-Luc and Beverly. There's something more to him, and that certainly seems to be the case. And it almost sounds like she's wanting to return him to the Great Link. I don't know. I can't picture Jack actually being a changeling now, especially because we know how Vadic and these other changelings right. are mimicking organs. And Jack would have, he came into existence in another way, so I don't think that that's the thing. I don't know. This is, I'm not sure where we're headed with that, other than I think that our heroes will turn the table on Vadic again. And you mentioned earlier on that maybe Jack's ability to control other people could be how they retake the ship. I think that's quite possible. And also, this is not really related to this, I guess, but I kept thinking about a couple of episodes ago when we saw Jack come onto the bridge mm-hmm. and kill everybody. And now I started thinking, what if that wasn't Jack and that's Vadic appearing to be Jack coming in and killing everybody? Now, if that's the case, I don't know why Jack would have experienced the vision, unless there's a link between Vadic and Jack, which I kind of feel like there might be here. This voice that he's hearing, before Vadic boards Titan, it feels a bit like she can sense Jack, like there's some connection between them. And, you know, he's hearing these voices. When they cut back to him in the turbolift with some other officers, there's some voice whispering. Actually, the English subtitles say voice whispering indistinctly, but it's not indistinct. You can hear it say connect us.
Yes.
But I couldn't understand the first word, and I thought maybe it says carefully, but that doesn't really make sense. So I went and checked the Japanese, because often when in English they either don't do closed captioning for something at all, they don't do subtitles, or they say something like indistinct chatter. In the Japanese, sometimes they actually translate it, because I guess they had the script or something that was supposed to be said, and they'll actually translate the words. And this one didn't do that. It just said tsunagatte, which means connect as a verb, like connect us or something. So they also dropped the first word. So I don't know what, but it did say connect instead of indistinct whispering. So I don't know what that is. But anyway, I started wondering again if maybe that vision isn't really Jack, and maybe that was a changeling. I'm not sure. Lots of mysteries left to unravel.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think this is, you know, when you're doing a season of television where everything connects and you have mysteries, the last thing you want is for people to figure out the mystery before you give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this season has done a wonderful job of not allowing people to have that ability. And so I appreciate that when it comes to the writing. And I think, well, you know, one of the things, Chris, that we've talked about, you know, we've talked about season one a little bit together, and of course we talked all the way through season two, and now we're in season three, and this has been, when it comes to a full-fledged, you know, season-long arc, this has been the entirely the most consistent so far. And mm-hmm. I just hope that that continues as we look towards the end.
Well, those sound like final thoughts, Matthew. So what's your rating for this one?
Yeah, I loved that this episode, you know, before we hit the last three, I felt like it was important to slow us down a little bit and to give us some explanations on things. And I thought that this was the right type of episode to do that in. And I thought also, one of the things I didn't call out earlier, but this episode was really well shot. The cinematography was gorgeous in it, and the kind of claustrophobic nature of the way it was shot was perfect for what's happening as these revelations are coming for people and they're kind of being slapped in the face. I just thought it was fantastic. So to me, I'm going to give this 9 out of 10 voices in Dolores' head, because I think this is another great episode of the season. And I didn't mind the fact that it was a little bit slower, but just gave us more exposition because I felt like, you know, at this point of the season, that's what we need, right? We don't necessarily need bigger action. We actually do want answers. And so I'm glad we're finally starting to get them. And I'm excited to see, you know, how the season will wrap up.
Yeah, I feel pretty much the same as I've said throughout today. I love that there are mysteries that we've yet to unravel, and I think great misdirection going on, as well as nice, subtle little setups for things that come later. One thing I didn't get to mention earlier that I wanted to was the scene with Jack and Sydney in the turbo lift where Jack is flirting with Sydney, and she's thinking to herself, like, is he flirting? You know, come on, be a little subtle, at least touch my hand. And then he touches right. her hand. And then I kind of wish they had left it there instead of when she gets off the turbo lift, she's asking herself, how did he know to touch my right. hand? And then she asks him, how did you know? Right. I kind of wish they had not put that in there, because I think that the way that it sets up the moment later when he helps her and tells her to roll and they can get away from the changelings, it would have been stronger that way, I think, if it were a little more subtle. But just dropping those little things in, I think, is very nice. So
yeah, I agree.
I'm going to give this episode 9 compromised prefix codes.
Oh, nice.
And in doing that, I just want to point out one somewhat jarring moment in this episode was when they ask, what's a compromised prefix code? And then Shaw goes into a very long explanation about what a compromised prefix code is. And that's one of those moments where, for the audience, okay, we've got to explain what this is. And I think that they went overboard just a little bit with the explanation.
I do have to say, I love the idea that, you know, not only do ships have prefix codes, but so do captains. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, that's actually a nice connection with Star Trek 2 and the way that starships are created and controlled, but also Starfleet captains. And it would make sense that basically they have, you know, the idea of, like, say, uncle, you know, that you have a secret code word that's like your mm-hmm. special code word, so that if you're compromised, you say that mm-hmm. code word. But instead of, obviously, you couldn't do that. So you have a code.
Yeah. Well, you know, younger Riker, when he went into the bar, he actually passed Minuet his prefix code on a napkin.
Oh, that's, yeah, there you go.
Here's how you lower my shields. Right.
I thought it was just with jazz and bourbon, but.
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Dominion. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. To find it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. It should come right on up. If not, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. Once you're in there, you'll find a post for this episode on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. The Babel Conference is designed to extend the conversation beyond the podcasts and the last couple of episodes in particular. We've had a lot of great interaction there, Matthew.
Absolutely.
With listeners sharing their thoughts and theories on what's happening, and it's been great fun, so we hope you'll join in. If you'd like to send us email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose the artificial tango, and your message will dance its way right over to Matthew and me. And you can also find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. And also, if you'd like to help us keep this show and everything we're doing going, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how to get involved and to support what we're doing. It takes a great deal of money to produce and distribute these podcasts, and we would not be here without your help. So thank you to everyone who's supporting us through Patreon right now. We greatly appreciate it. Now, Matthew, when you're not taking part in the anti-Kolinar demonstrations on Acleon 7, where can people find you?
Chris, you know I would never go there. Some of my best friends are Vulcans, when I'm not protesting the protest, you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero are the places I am most active. Of course, we've got the 602 Club, which we talk about all of those fandoms outside of Star Trek we love here on the network. We hope you join us there. Some great bonus shows that are going on as well. It's an absolute blast. You can also find me doing literary treks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I are talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine's 30th anniversary on The Orb. We're also doing the 20th anniversary of Star Trek Enterprise on Warp 5 and Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds, which we know is coming back this summer, Chris, so I can't wait for that. So you want to check out all of those shows. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network talking about Harry Potter on Owl Post as we talk through every single chapter, one chapter at a time. You can also find me on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills talking about Star Wars each and every week. But Chris, you know, when you're not trying to figure out as a changeling how you get that square peg into a round hole, where can people find you?
I just change it to round, Matthew. It's easy. I'm a changeling. But after I do that, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, you and I do all those shows together. Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time. You can find me in mini episodes on mini shows in the back catalog. And if you would like to chat, you can find me in social media. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but you can also find me on Mastodon there on the Trekkies.social instance. C. Brian Jones there as well. And I'd love to chat with you in any of those places. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to next week where we might have to surrender.
Well, Chris, I am excited about that. But until then, I hope everybody will join me in my cracking little suite. Recording.
Okay. Tuvok Calto Pants.
Evil Tuvok. evil Tuvok, Chris.
See, Calto Pants, you can only wear them once you've been able to get all of the threads in proper alignment so that they form the proper shape of pants.
Well, depending how bad you are at Calto, I guess that depends on how badly you want to wear pants that day. So maybe.
It's like, Captain, I'm sorry I'm late. You're 9 hours late, Tuvok. What happened? I could not get my Calto pants together today.
Yeah, and Janeway's like, get a new damn pair of pants that don't require you to spend hours playing Calto.
Tuvok, we have things called replicators. Just ask the computer for some pants. All right, here we go.